Well, the caveman continues. Look at the next part of verse 1. For my soul takes refuge in thee, and in the shadow of thy wings I will take refuge. Now, he already said this. You don't have to turn there, but let me turn back to Psalm 142. He repeats. I'm not the only one that repeats what I say. He repeats, too. Psalm 142, he said, I cried, O Lord, and said, Thou art my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. He comes out of the cave. He looks out again. He says the same thing. He said, In the shadow of thy wings I will take refuge until destruction passes by. He said, God, you're my refuge. If everything else fails, if everything else crumbles around me, you're my refuge. He said it in Psalm 142, verse 5. He says it here. I think one of the most beautiful anthems of God as refuge is the one you all know, Psalm 91. I'd like to read you just a few verses from Psalm 91. We're not sure who wrote that. Could be Moses wrote it. He wrote the 90th, and they're in conjunction there. But look at Psalm 91, or just listen along if you don't want to turn there. Because this is extolling God as refuge. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, My refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust. For it is He who delivers you from the snare of the trapper and from the deadly pestilence. And He will cover you with His pinions, and under His wings you may seek refuge. That word again. His faithfulness is a shield and bulwark. And then it goes through not to be afraid of anything. And so David, and back to Psalm 57. In this psalm, in this first verse of Psalm 57, is mirroring the fact that God is our shelter, our protection, our covering, our shade. He is our refuge. How much to us now we realize somewhat of what he was anticipating. Because David, in a moment of sin, said, Oh, don't take your spirit from me. But now we know that because of the cross, God's spirit will never be taken from us. That we have the ultimate refuge because the refuge has come to live within us. He has sealed our spirits. He has guarded our minds with that helmet of salvation we must put on. He is the one who is guarding the issue of our life because our loins are girt about with truth. He is the one that shields our heart from which come all the issues with the breastplate of righteousness. Through the cross, we have the ultimate refuge because of the ministry of God's Spirit. And yes, we must take up that armor. And yes, sometimes someone has to remind us to do that. I was watching or reading one of the little cartoons that comes in the Insight magazine, and it showed a businessman, executive, standing with his portable computer and his briefcase at the bus stop in his overcoat. And his friend says, You won't get too alarmed if I tell you something, will you? And he was standing there in his little slippers with bunnies on them because he hadn't put on his boots or his shoes. And he had his computer and he had his briefcase, but he hadn't shod his feet correctly. And yes, sometimes in the church and in the body, there is a marvelous ministry of one to another, reminding someone to shod their feet with the preparation of the gospel, to take up the sword, to take up the shield. But the energy for all that comes from the fact that we have already have moved into us the blessed Holy Spirit, who makes God the refuge we can continually flee to. But let's hasten on, because verse 2 says that God accomplishes deliverance. And if you've ever been delivered from sin, and if you've ever been delivered from temptation, and if you've ever been delivered from a dark moment, and if you ever are to be delivered from any difficulty that's facing you, the only way it will be accomplished is right here in verse 2. I will cry to God Most High, to God who accomplishes all things for me. I hear overtones of John 15. For apart from me, you can do nothing. And anything you do apart from me amounts to nothing, because it is God who accomplishes all things for me. He will send from heaven, verse 3, and will save me. I hear Paul saying, There is no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. There's an open door of escape, if you'll be willing to take it. Because He will send from heaven. He will save me. He reproaches him who tramples upon me. And David now starts into a series of reminders of what he's going through. He says here he's being trampled upon. But in the midst of that trampling, the end of verse 3 says, and that's the amplification of the start of verse 2, God saves, he accomplishes, because he says here, God will send forth his loving kindness. Ah, there's that word again. His loving loyalty to us. His faithfulness because we belong to him. He's going to send his loving kindness and his truth. What a blessing to know that when we're getting trampled on, that God is there. He is accomplishing his purpose in us. He is sending from heaven. He is saving us. But now look at verse 4, because we go into something that I think is fascinating, and maybe it will be very timely for us right now, as some of the troubled hearts need to realize verses 4, 5, and 6, what they're talking about. Because here's David who fled to this cave to get away from Saul and all the armies of Israel that were searching around trying to get him. He's running from the Philistines, and he comes there, and all these people say, "We're coming here with you. You're our captain, David. You're our leader, David. You're our brother. You're our son." There were all types of family relationships because his family came, and also all these discontents and malcontents and indebted people. And they've all huddled in this cave, and now David gives us a brief insight into what it's like inside the family. All these people were supposed to be together. They're following him. He's their leader. And look what he says. Because here's what the other cavemen are doing. Here God is refining David. David's running for his life. These people look to him for leadership. And while he's trying to lead them, look what they're doing to him in the cave. In verse 4, "My soul is among lions. I must lie among those who breathe forth fire." Doesn't sound very pleasant in the cave, does it? "Even the sons of men whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword." He says there's a little interlude in his reflections on God, and he says, you know, there's an enemy without. They said there's also an enemy within. Because in the hard times, some of them weren't responding correctly, and they were becoming like predators on him. They were like lions. Those that he was laying among as he lived in that cave were breathing forth fire. Reminds me a little bit of James 3, who says the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue can set on fire the course of nature. And sometimes that tongue is set on fire of hell. "Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the image of God. Behold, how great a matter a little fire can kindle," James reminds us. And he says here, David echoes that. He says, "Their tongues are a sharp sword." But what does he do in the midst of that? Does he go and knock their teeth out? Does he throw them out of the cave? No. What does he do in verse 5? He just takes his focus and he goes like this. Looks up. And I guess that's one way to deal with it. And some people wonder why I don't say more about all the unrest in the church. Well, I just see a biblical admonition that if God is at work in our midst, as long as I keep my focus, verse 5, "Be exalted above the heavens, O God. Let thy glory be above all the earth." You see, our focus is to be on God. And if we find difficulties, we already know the test. It says in 1 John 4, we're to test the spirits. And I would just share with you, here's a personal note from me to you all. I think I'll read from James 3. And you don't even have to turn there. But we're in a time which is unparalleled in the church. And I've actually had to have a group of overseers who have been appointed to meet the accusations of people in this congregation, which are false, I will tell you. Not one person has brought up a true accusation so far. And I've actually had to have a group of overseers to meet with them. But listen, if you want to test the spirits, James said this, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, and that word selfish ambition is the rising up and trying to be in control in your heart, do not be arrogant and lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above. Whenever there is striving and whenever there is this accusatory nature that comes upon Christians, God says it's not from above. It is earthly. It is natural. Yes, it's human. But it's not from God. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But here's the wisdom that is from above. It's pure, peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, even when it gets rough, and without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. If you want to see what's of God, it's that which tends toward peace, love, faith, hope, not discontent, not disorder, not breathing fire, not tongues as sharp as swords, but a focus, back to Psalm 57:5, of being exalted above the heaven, O God. Let thy glory be above all the earth. Well, then he goes back to his woes in verse 6. They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They dug a pit before me. But here comes God saving him again in verse 6. They themselves have fallen into the midst of it. And something very important for us to remember is when God is in control, that even the devices prepared by men, nets for our steps, pit for our souls, God will overturn. And he will bring forth in righteousness his word and his people. But